All right, this will be a NanoCast episode. Ha, 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 ha.
Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of 24 books, 34 short stories, and countless articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 234.
Today, Mike says, very strange but true, that I am hearing your question voice as I'm typing my very own question. Oh, well, in that case, I'm going to have to start changing the question voice up with really bad accents at some point. So, Mike, I'm arbitrarily designating you a stereotypical Russian.
I'm a huge fan of the podcast and love your Business 101 book. Can't thank you enough for putting this great information out there.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you liked it. I had fun writing it, and there's another one, which is going to be out any minute now. I just had to do a second proof on it, because I realized that I had sent the wrong manuscript out to the printer. Ah, these things happen. You continue.
Curious about using triggers prompts to spur your writing. At some point, I remember you mentioning that you write from triggers. I've also heard Dean Wesley Smith talk about this, especially in his Stories from July posts, where he would sit down each day, intending to write a short story, only knowing the title to the short story after he mashed up two pulp magazine titles. He said he'd write the thing on that day, only knowing the title. Very Harlan Ellison in the bookstore, and massively cool to follow along with. I tried to do it for a story and came up with something I had a lot of fun with.
Ain't it fun? Oh, I hear you, Mike. I love doing that. I don't do it as much anymore as I used to because I write more novels now than short stories. But when I can find the excuse to do it, I love, 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 love to do it. It's so much fun. First time I ever did that successfully, it was after watching Psycho 4. And something about Psycho 4 triggered this really bad punish joke in my head, which then occurred to me would be a great first line for a story. And so I wrote the story from that first line, and it turned out to be really damn creepy. And that story is actually available. It's The Coffee Service. It's available both on its own and in the Sculpting God collection, in case you are interested in delving into one of my few early stories that has made it out into public.
It was a while ago when you mentioned doing this on a podcast episode, and I don't remember which one it was. I feel like it was more a fleeting comment than a focus of the episode. But I remember at the time you said it, I got an impression you also used triggers and prompts.
Yes, I do. Love them, as I just said. Frankly, I sometimes do it even with novels. Actually, I frequently do it with novels. Come to think of it, that's almost the only way I write now. Huh, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, it's almost everything I write from a trigger or a prompt now.
Is there a reason you use this technique? Is it an advanced technique? I often wonder if I should just, in the interest of building a long-term career, use the techniques discussed by LTPF writer, i.e. Dean Wesley Smith, even if those techniques are more uncomfortable and seemingly harder to use than the outline plan the entire thing method. Plotting gets boring to me, so I embrace writing into the dark, although I'm still under 500,000 words into my career. I've heard, and forgive me for just throwing everything Dean Wesley Smith at you, but I get the sense that you know each other and have similar views on these topics. That outlines are just crutches to use when you need them, and at some point, you need to discard them. So I wonder if it might be useful just to forego them altogether, which tends to work in real life to cure a sprain. If you might discuss why you write from prompts and some techniques to do so, I will be forever grateful. Your Russian friend, Mike.
Okay, you didn't say that last bit, but you know, hey. Okay, I said a few things in an interlocutory way as I was reading your question, but let me go through it. Dean and I have similar views, but they're not the same views. We argue about them. It's fun. The process by which you develop stories is a highly individualized thing, and there will be a set of methods that you settle on fairly early in your career that will stick with you for a while. This is not prescriptive, it's descriptive. This is just how most people work. You and Dean call things like outlining and whatnot crutches. I tend to think of them as scaffolding. There are some kinds of stories I think that they're necessary for. Now, I think this because of the time I spent doing screenwriting. When you're doing screenwriting, you have to write to an outline. It doesn't mean that you don't also write off into the dark. It's actually possible to do both. But you have to write to a structural outline because you have to hit certain beats at certain points in time. There's some genres that are highly formulaic that are like that too, such as the action-adventure genre and the romance genre. Now, once you internalize those outlines, you write to them without looking at the outline. Another thing you do in screenwriting is you use scene cards, where you come up with your set pieces, the great things you want to have happen in the movie, because these are the things upon which the funding is based, and then you write them out on index cards, one or two sentence descriptions, and you use those as high points, and then you use other index cards for other scenes, and then you shuffle them around until you get a coherent story flow, and then you write the dialogue. There's some sorts of writing like that where you do need a scaffold. And of course, any sort of nonfiction writing that's not narrative nonfiction, anything where you're communicating, teaching, and whatnot, you need a scaffolding, whether it's external to you or whether it's internalized and you've just learned the form really well. In that sense, what Dean advocates is not writing without any outline at all. What he advocates is internalizing the structure of storytelling to the point where you don't need to outline any particular story. And I absolutely agree with him on that level. There's a few reasons why. And actually, the best way to explain this I have ever seen, and fortunately it is free for streaming on Amazon Prime right now, I think. The series is, hopefully the episode is. There's an episode of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles called Indiana Jones and the Mystery of the Blues. In this episode, the first half of the episode, Indy is a waiter at a speakeasy and he befriends Sidney Bechet, the great jazz legend, and wants to learn to play jazz. So Sidney gives him a soprano sax, and Indy starts fooling around with it, and he gets up on stage in the speakeasy to jam with the band, and he gets laughed off stage. Because he's riffing on the melody, but he's not playing jazz. He's just making noises that are kind of in the same key that they're doing. It doesn't match. Even though it fits musically on a mathematical level, on an emotional level, on a narrative of the song level, it doesn't work at all. And so what Sidney does is he sits him down and he says, look, here's the thing. You're not playing the song that we're playing. What you need to do is learn one song. This will teach you how to do jazz. Learn one song, learn it until your ears bleed, and then you'll be able to play jazz. So learn Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And then there's a montage where Indy is walking around playing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, starting off with just dun 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 in kind of a tin-eared mechanistic way. And over the course of this, he gets bored with it, he starts experimenting with it and feeling out the corners until he's starting to do da 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 Jazz is all about rhythm and improvisation within a framework, and it feels loose and like it's all over the place, but there's a rigid structure underneath that makes the looseness work. It's a rootedness that creates the vast freedom where jazz is concerned. Storytelling is the same way. There's fundamentals that you have to get rooted in order to be able to explore the vast idea spaces that your plots, characters, and themes open up. Because without those tools, it's like setting adrift on an ocean with no sail and no currents. You won't even drift somewhere useful. You'll just hang out in the doldrums forever. Even if you think that what you're doing is exciting, it won't mean anything. And I don't mean something in a great cosmic sense, oh, this means something. I mean that it won't convey a sense of being worth anyone's time to your readers, which means that the art of storytelling breaks because storytelling is a two-part art. You tell, they hear. If they're not going to listen, you're not telling it well enough. So when I think about writing off into the dark, I think about internalizing that structure. You have to have it internalized in order to be able to go off completely into the dark. Now, this is something I know for a fact that Dean agrees with, though we use radically different terminology to describe it. In the early parts of your writing career, you're learning to connect that structure which you've internalized as an audience member through hearing stories since you were a little kid. You're learning to connect that structure to your storytelling in written form. I guarantee you, you already do it when you speak. Anytime you're at the bar or at school or whatnot, passing around anecdotes, sharing jokes, you're telling stories that have the same structure as the stories that you're going to be writing. Because stories have a particular structure in the Western tradition. There's one overarching megastructure, and then there's about 15 substructures that come down from there. These are the basic plot formulas. When I do my big book of formulas, hopefully later this year, it's going to lay them all out. They're all things that are worth learning. But when you learn them, what you're actually doing is you're learning formally what you've already picked up informally, because sometimes that can help you connect one to the other. Learning them formally is not necessary if they're already in your muscle memory. So when you ride off into the dark or from a story prompt and just go, you're using all that stuff that you already know. Now, when you start to create scaffolding at the level of plotting and specific outlines and scene carding a whole book and that stuff like that, there are times when I will still use those tools, and here's what they are. They are the times when I'm writing a book where the plot is so complex that I can't keep it in my head all at once. How complex a plot that takes has gotten much bigger since I was a young writer. I used to have to do that with anything more complex than a straight line mystery type of thing. Now I can keep about 10 concurrent storylines in my head at once, as long as I'm cycling back and refreshing myself as I write. And in that sense, the other kinds of scaffolding you use are a crutch, and you can use them either to keep yourself weak or to make yourself stronger. Here's the danger they present and the way that you can use them that will keep you weak. By writing something down, it is natural to assume that this is how it has to be. You put a lot of thought and creative energy into making the decisions of what went into the outline, so then you feel constrained to write to the outline. This is where people tend to go off the rails, in my not-so-humble opinion. Having an outline is great if you treat it like Indy treated Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. No matter how complex your story is, your outline should only ever give you anchor points, because you will discover things as you're writing, different options that could make your story way better. But if you hold your outline as sacred, you're going to cut off the wellspring of creativity that drives your passion, that drives your storytelling, and that takes what you're trying to do and makes it better than you could have expected. Producing stories that are better than you intended is one of the ways that you know that you've hit a professional level. You won't always be able to see it. Some people never can, regardless of how good they are. But that's one of the ways that you gauge that you've hit that pro level, is when you intended to do A, and you did A plus 1,000, and it's amazing. If you don't get the feeling reading your own stuff back, and most people don't, of how well you fulfilled your own intentions, you can always tell by the reactions of your readers. Because your first reader will tell you when you knocked their socks off. And when you start knocking socks off on a regular basis, you know that you've really, really hit a good level. So how to sum this up in a way that's really concrete? Because I've been meandering around. I agree that outlines are used by most people in a way that really hampers their progress. They become dependent on them. They become a lot like Dumbo's magic feather. That's not the only way to use an outline. Another way is to use it to sort your thoughts out before you sit down to write. Some people find that very useful because they have chaotic, noisy brains. I don't know when that's a good thing and when that's a bad thing, because people with chaotic, noisy brains who just relax and go with it, people like Harlan Ellison, produce incredible things. As long as they trust themselves to go with it. And I think that trusting yourself is the crux of a lot of this. Most writers, most artists of any kind, don't trust themselves until long after they've earned the right to do so. And a lot of them never trust themselves, never really trust themselves for the length of their career. And when you're not trusting yourself, that means you're going to behave in a more risk-averse fashion. It means you will not find over the long term what you're truly capable of. The range of capabilities that you have as a human being for the awful stuff you can endure and the glorious stuff you can do is far vaster than anything you will ever explore growing up in the narrow set of circumstances you did. Doesn't matter where you grow up. It's a narrow set of circumstances because it's circumscribed by one person with one perspective in one life. It is natural, and most people do, assume that the life they've lived, that the experience they've had, in some way marks the boundaries of their possible world. It's not true. And all you have to do to realize it's not true is to read the stories of refugees who were displaced by the Soviet invasion of Eastern Europe, or by the Holocaust, or by the wars in North Africa in the 90s. You read the stories of these people who move languages, cultures, they move their entire families on nothing across the world and start from scratch and build up again. You realize that there is a much vaster well of resource in yourself than you would normally give yourself credit for. Forcing yourself into uncomfortable situations, creatively and practically, is one of the ways you unlock those extra abilities. It's one of the ways you train up to be able to accomplish much more than you can right now. And it is for that reason that I am suspicious of people who, having more than 5 or 10 books under their belt, still depend on their outlines. It may work for them, frequently it does. But I always look at them with at the side of my eye when I hear about them doing stuff like that, and I think, as much as I like their books now, what would they be producing if they allowed themselves to go without the outline? A very good example of this, in both the positive and negative sense, is George R.R. Martin. Floating around on the internet is his initial pitch for Game of Thrones. He anticipated a 2 or 3 book series that had a radically different story than the one that we've got so far in A Song of Ice and Fire. The treatment is a Hollywood-style treatment. You can read the whole story. It looks fantastic. It's nowhere near as decadent and baroque and phantasmagorical as what he's produced. He also has gone a little off the rails. He seems a little lost, like he doesn't know how to end the story, but that's something that's been with him through his whole career. But the outline that he submitted in order to sell the first book, he blew that out of the water by halfway through the first book. And the ride it's taken us on since then is fantastic and something that he could never have planned. It's opening yourself up to the stuff that you can accomplish but that you can never plan, that you miss if you remain dependent upon outlines. Now, notice the wording, and this is where I differ from Dean a lot. Remain dependent upon. I've got no problem with using them. I've used them myself. I've found that in some circumstances, especially when learning new ways of storytelling, they can be incredibly useful. But any time I use one, I make it a point to use it as little as possible and to allow myself aggressively to deviate from it as much as I want. People who feel like they need some scaffolding, that's how I advocate you treat it. I think you should treat it like scaffolding. It's something that's meant to be torn down. The closer the cathedral gets to completion, the less scaffolding you should see, and the more spectacular improvisation should be going on. The better you get at your storytelling, the less scaffolding you should be using, because that's the way that you can use the scaffolding to strengthen you rather than to make you dependent upon it. Let me look at the question, make sure I didn't miss anything. Now, as to whether you need to use it at all, frankly, you don't. It's not an advanced technique to write into the dark. It's just an emotionally difficult one. So you tend to find more advanced writers doing it because they've learned to trust themselves. But you can do that from minute one and be great, like Harlan Ellison did, like Rod Serling did, like Lester Dent and L. Ron Hubbard and Edgar Allan Poe and Saki and Ambrose Bierce. And Mark Twain, these people didn't outline, by and large, though I understand Twain outlined Huckleberry Finn a bit. They didn't need to. They trusted themselves to tell a story. So, yeah, you can get by without outlining from day one. There's no problem with that. It's just that it's scarier. You don't trust that your subconscious knows what it's doing, because your conscious mind doesn't know what it's doing yet. But in terms of storytelling, your subconscious has been training from day one, where your conscious mind has only been training since you started thinking, hey, maybe I want it right. Maybe I ought to learn about story structure. It's good to have both sets of toolkits, but make no mistake, your subconscious mind is far more practiced and far more powerful at this kind of thing. So the big trick is learning to trust that it knows what it's doing, so that on a conscious level you can worry about all the riffs and improvisation you want to, and you don't have to worry about trusting that you'll actually get to the end of the story. And if you have trouble with specific points along the way, like endings or midpoints or openings, you can practice those things particularly in order to get better at them until, like Indy's Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, they settle back into your subconscious and they become part of the massive engine that drives your storytelling. Thank you very much for the question, Mike, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at everydaynovelist.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. The Everyday Novelist is copyright 2017 J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions, Inc. and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.